This president does more than any president that I've ever been able to have the privilege of researching and reading about.
President Trump and the Republicans have their turn at a convention. It's Tuesday, August 25th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, North Korea's effect on the election, New Zealand mosque shooter sentenced, COVID affects election workers, saving space camp. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Republicans are opening their national convention this week with a series of live and virtual events. Some party delegates have gathered in Charlotte, North Carolina, and have officially nominated President Donald Trump as their candidate in November's national election to decide who controls the White House. The president has plans to speak at all four nights of the convention and to give his acceptance speech in Washington. Ahead of the convention, party representatives discuss their plans on Sunday morning talk shows, as we hear more from VOA's Arash Arabasadi.
Republican delegates begin meeting this week in Charlotte, North Carolina, and will likely nominate President Donald Trump as their candidate to defeat former Vice President Joe Biden in November's presidential election. Trump, dealing with a troubled economy, ongoing protests over social and racial injustice, and criticism over his response to a coronavirus pandemic that has killed more than 176,000 Americans, trails Biden in most national polls. Sunday, White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, however, praised his boss's work ethic in making a pitch for a second term.
This president, each and every day, is not only well-prepped, but does more than any president that I've ever been able to have the privilege of researching and reading about in terms of wanting to make sure that we advance critical agendas for the hardworking American people on Main Street.
Meanwhile, Trump's challenger Joe Biden made history last week naming Senator Kamala Harris as his vice presidential candidate. Harris is the first black woman and South Asian American on a national ticket, and deputy campaign manager Kate Benningfield says Biden is about inclusion and a promise to heal a nation battling the coronavirus pandemic.
You know, as president, Joe Biden is somebody who would be able to bring people to the table to get meaningful change done and to get relief to people who need it, to the small businesses who are hurting, to the working families who are hurting.
As many as 336 of more than 2,400 Republican delegates will be in Charlotte Monday, after which the Republican Party will move to virtual locations. Other members of the Trump family will speak this week, including First Lady Melania Trump. The president is expected to appear every night, and Thursday he will accept the party's nomination from the South Lawn of the White House, where he will deliver his acceptance speech. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
There's much more on the Republican National Convention, and you can find it by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia, also on Facebook at VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. Stay tuned, there's more on the Republican National Convention coming up in just a moment. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. New Zealand and South Korea toughen coronavirus restrictions. Why is Vietnam interested in Russia's alleged COVID vaccine? Indian Supreme Court to lawyer, apologize or go to jail over tweets. China launches advanced warship for Pakistan Navy. Sentencing begins into New Zealand's 2019 mosque attacks. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and a lot more when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia and stop by the VOAnews.com website. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Republican delegates to the party's national convention have flown into the state of North Carolina, where because of the pandemic, there is now a scaled-down in-person convention as well as added virtual events. Carolyn Pursuti spoke with national delegates who arrived from around the country and were eager to renominate President Donald Trump with the aim of winning a second term in the White House.
Sherlene Ostrov is stepping out cautiously. It is her first visit outside her state since the pandemic. Ostrov is the Republican chair from Hawaii, a Democratic-controlled state with severe COVID restrictions.
Our economy is decimated. We have zero tourists coming in. Restaurants aren't open. And people say this is not the vision. This is not going to be sustainable.
It's also challenging to be Republican in the traditionally liberal state of Oregon, where Portland is in its third month of Black Lives Matter protests. Bill Currier says the president did his part to try to end them.
When he offered to help with national or federal resources in Portland to calm or quell the riots and so on, and the mayor and the governor basically snubbed him, that didn't sit well with people, even non-Republicans.
Democrats argued last week that Trump's actions as president worsened both the pandemic and racial protests. National polls indicate their presidential nominee, Joe Biden, now has a 9-point lead. But among Republicans, Trump remains popular. And among Americans, his 42% approval rating is a point higher than a year ago. Kansas delegate Mike Kuckelman says he listened to Democrats during their convention and didn't hear anything new.
I saw that, and a lot of what Biden said was just they were taxed on the president. He didn't tell us anything that he was going to do or his administration would do if he were elected.
Tonight,
Biden selected California Senator Kamala Harris as his running mate. As the first black woman and first Asian American woman on a major party ticket, she is seen partly as a way to win over women voters. Ostrov, who is raising two college-aged daughters, says she doubts its effectiveness.
I'm not an identity politics person. Obviously, I'm a daughter of immigrants. I served the military. I'm a woman of color. None of that is important on why to vote for or identify with a candidate.
Democrats are also out near the convention trying to change minds, but not Tracy Honnels.
For me doing that? Absolutely not. No, I support President Trump. I've supported him since 2016, early on in 2016. I believe that he's the right person to take us forward. There's no way I would consider moving over to support Joe Biden.
Security around the convention hall is tight. The in-person events on Monday impose a limit of just 6 delegates per state and territory. And it doesn't end here. The 336 delegates are invited to the White House on Thursday to watch President Trump accept his party's nomination in person. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News, Charlotte, North Carolina.
Happening now in Asia, at least 13 people were killed, dozens wounded, including soldiers and police, in a twin bombing involving a suicide attacker on a southern Philippine island that is a stronghold of Islamist militants. You'll stay up to date with all the news when you follow online at VOA 60. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thanks for being with us today as we continue with VOA Asia. During his first term as president, Donald Trump met 3 times and reportedly exchanged at least 25 personal letters with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. But those interactions could soon end, depending on the outcome of the November presidential election, as we hear from VOA's Bill Gallo in Seoul.
Donald Trump may have redefined what is possible with North Korea, but his challenger, Joe Biden, has promised a more traditional approach to U.S. foes.
I'll be a president who will stand with our allies and friends and make it clear to our adversaries the days of cozying up to dictators is over.
Biden says he wouldn't meet with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un without preconditions. His running mate, Kamala Harris, said she wouldn't exchange love letters with Kim either. Any talks, if they happen at all, would probably be working-level discussions rather than big summits. Instead, Biden says he would work with allies to pressure North Korea. To analyst Bong Yong-shik, that policy sounds like a throwback to that of former U.S. President Barack Obama.
It's going to be very similar to Obama administration's North Korea policy, dubbed as a policy of strategic patience, basically just waiting for North Korea to get smoke out of the hole, out of the desperation.
But after conducting years of tests, North Korea now has a credible nuclear weapons program, and many believe the calculation has changed.
Korea has nuclear weapons and ICBMs that can possibly carry nuclear warheads to at least part of U.S. Territory or U.S. bases in East Asia. So now you can be strategically patient in terms of, you know, engaging in actual nuclear deterrence with North Korea, right? All you need to do is prevent North Korean leadership from pushing the button to fire the missiles.
Trump has had some success. Since the summits began, North Korea has refrained from any big missile or nuclear tests. But for months, North Korea has refused to talk. Trump insists the deadlock will be broken as soon as he's reelected. But Trump is likely to be unpredictable, says analyst Soo Kim of the RAND Corporation.
The principles that he sort of follows does not really seem to be pegged to anything in particular. So whatever whims or mood he feels, he's able to just to backtrack or do a complete 180 from where he was.
For the U.S. and North Korea, it's a wide range of possibilities. There could be more summits, maybe a return to fire and fury threats, or just the same old deadlock that's been there for years. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to find them easily. With VOA Asia, you can also follow radio program host VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe said he had undergone more medical tests but declined to provide details a week after a first hospital visit that fueled growing speculation about his health. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter, Facebook, and VOA 60. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, a sentencing hearing has begun for the Australian man who carried out the mosque attacks in the New Zealand city of Christchurch in March 2019. Brenton Tarrant has admitted killing 51 worshippers and injuring dozens more. In court Monday, the self-confessed white supremacist has come face to face with relatives of some of his victims. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
A year after his deadly rampage, Brenton Tarrant pleaded guilty to the murders of 51 Muslim worshippers, 40 charges of attempted murder and a terrorism offence. The 29-year-old Australian man had earlier denied attacking two mosques during Friday prayers in Christchurch, New Zealand, before reversing his plea. A sentencing hearing began Monday and is expected to last 4 days. Tarrant faces a minimum prison term of 17 years, but Justice Cameron Mander, the High Court judge in charge of the case, has the authority to order him locked away for life with no parole, a sentence that has never been handed down in New Zealand. More than 60 people will deliver victim impact statements to the court. Some have travelled from overseas and undergone a mandatory 2-week COVID-19 quarantine in order to take part. Among the victims was 35-year-old Hussein Alomari. His sister Aya says she wants to look his killer in the eye and tell him her spirit has not been crushed.
My plan is to eyeball him. We'll see how that goes. I'm going to tell him what he intended to do has done the complete opposite effect. Okay, you've killed my brother, but God is still there. So, I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
Brenton Tarrant's crime sent waves of grief around the world. Many of his victims were migrants and refugees from India, Somalia, Egypt, Syria, and Jordan. The youngest to die was a 3-year-old boy. The attacks horrified New Zealand, an isolated country of 5 million. Its people invariably saw their country as a safe place, far from the extremist violence that scarred other parts of the world. That changed in March 2019. The Friday prayer murders in Christchurch prompted the New Zealand government to ban the military-style semi-automatic weapons that were used by the gunmen. He live-streamed part of his rampage, adding to the trauma of his victims' families. This week, They can tell their stories of pain, loss and survival at the High Court in Christchurch. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
How to stay healthy. Wash your hands with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. Scrub thoroughly for 20 seconds. If you cannot wash your hands, use a hand sanitizer. Taking these steps can prevent not only coronavirus, but also colds and flu and other viruses.
Now on VOA Asia, some elderly Americans who normally volunteer to work at election polling stations say they will be staying at home this year because of the risk of contracting COVID-19. The elderly are the most vulnerable to the coronavirus, and this is likely to have an effect on the November elections, not just for turnout, but also at the polling stations themselves, because those locations depend on volunteer workers. We have more in this report by Valentina Vasileva, narrated by Anna Rice.
65-year-old Elizabeth Slanta from Arlington, Virginia, has been volunteering at polling stations for the past 3 decades. It's been a Slanta family tradition. Her mother has also helped out at the polls. Retired in 2011, Slanta was looking forward to volunteering again in November until she tested positive for COVID-19 in March.
I came up with the virus, coronavirus, on the 14th of March. And the only real contact that I could think of that I really had a lot of contact with people was at the polls, because I worked at my precinct near where I live.
The virus hit Slanta hard. For 3 long weeks, she was at home fighting a high fever, and she's still suffering from the virus's effects. She has not regained her sense of smell and has lost some of her hair. Recently, she decided that until the pandemic is over, she's not going to volunteer at the polls.
The chief in my precinct, his wife, I think, might be somehow immune compromised. And then also his mother-in-law lives with them now. So I emailed him for the last election and I said, I am not going to be working, so don't count on me. And he said, I think I am not going to work either because, you know, of the situation.
When Slanta worked at the polls for primary elections in March, there were no strict protective measures in place yet. Face masks in indoor public spaces were not mandatory, and social distancing wasn't taken seriously either. But the situation has changed, says another poll worker, Emily Landsman, who plans to volunteer in November.
The county provided us with masks, and they say Arlington elections, so they're kind of fun as far as masks go. They offered us face shields if we wanted that. They put up plexiglass barriers, so there's a barrier between the voter and us.
Still, Landsman says she's a little worried. She's volunteering at the largest polling station in Arlington County, where over 6,000 people are registered. But she's determined to go through with it. After all, she adds, someone does have to work. According to the data of the U.S. Election Assistance Commission, in 2018, some 58% of election workers were over 60. That is the age group that is most at risk during the coronavirus pandemic. If local election officials don't manage to find enough younger volunteers, the 2020 November elections might be tricky, says Ryan Pieranunzi of the Fair Elections Center.
So in 2016, according to the EAC, the Election Assistance Commission, it took over 900,000 poll workers to hold the election across the country in 2016. And a significant portion of those were over the age of 60. So we know that it's going to be hundreds of thousands of people who are older Americans over the age of 60 who traditionally who have served in the past. And we're not sure, you know, what proportion of those will be serving this year versus not.
Staffing companies are reaching out to college students to work, but experts say it is not that easy to convince young Americans. Poll work usually requires 12 hours a day with lots of responsibility and also stress. Staffing polling centers does pay. The compensation varies from state to state and can range from $14 to $15 an hour. This might motivate some young unemployed students, recruiters believe. The question is whether there will be enough volunteers to staff the polling centers in November. For Valentina Vasilieva in Washington, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Spaceflight has long captured the imagination of people around the world, and young people here in the United States have had the chance to go to the U.S. Space and Rocket Center in Huntsville, Alabama, which is home to Space Camp, where they could learn how to become an astronaut. But Space Camp faced permanent closure as COVID-19 forced the internationally popular Science and Technology Center to turn students and visitors away. Then, a change. VOA's Kane Faribault reports an online campaign to save Space Camp is providing a lifeline to get through the pandemic.
2019, the 50th anniversary of astronauts landing on the moon, was a banner year for the U.S. Space and Rocket Center in Huntsville, Alabama. Visitors from around the world came to celebrate the city where the Saturn V rocket that carried astronauts into space was developed.
We had record number of attendance. We had almost 45,000 students in Space Camp last year in 2019. We were starting off 2020 so strong. Our attendance was higher just even in the museum, and we were heading into a sold-out summer of Space Camp.
Pat Ammons with the U.S. Space and Rocket Center says it came to a halt when COVID-19 arrived in the U.S. Space Camp, the popular program the center operates where youth learn how to be astronauts, closed completely in March. 2 months of revenue from campers and visitors to the museum evaporated instantly. Although a state agency, Ammons says the center doesn't get state or federal funding and didn't qualify for benefits in the multi-trillion dollar coronavirus relief package passed by Congress earlier this year.
We earn our income through the people who walk in the door and the students who attend our Space Camp program,
which includes many international visitors.
About 20% yearly of our students come from overseas. In the fall particularly, we have a lot of students who come from Australia, the UK, China, India, a lot of students who come as part of school groups. And so those students, of course, won't be coming this year.
As attendance tanked, the center was quickly burning through savings.
By the end of October, we would have exhausted all the remaining cash that we had.
If we do not receive a minimum of $1.5 million by the end of October, we were not going to be able to keep the museum open, and we were not going to be able to offer Space Camp in 2021.
Ben Chandler, a Space Camp graduate and now chairman of the nonprofit U.S. Space and Rocket Center Education Foundation, which helps fund the center and Space Camp, says that's when it was decided to ask for help through an online GoFundMe campaign.
Inside of 7 days, we've raised over $1.5 million through, I think at last I had looked, there had been 8,000 individuals that had donated to the campaign.
Boeing Corporation and SAIC were two of the biggest donors, together contributing $750,000.
Thank you for saving Space Camp.
Chandler says while the organization is somewhat transitioning from survive to thrive mode, the fundraising effort isn't over.
We're trying to repair some of that financial damage, and that's why we're going to keep the campaign open and alive and to try to do as much good as we can.
Today, while Space Camp is open, operations are significantly reduced.
We would be typically crawling with over 1,000 children a week here. We are operating at about 40 to 50% of our normal capacity in the museum, and we're only at 20% of our students in Space Camp.
Ammons says Space Camp won't stay open year-round this year due to health restrictions.
Our fall and winter season is international students and school groups. And so obviously international students and school groups aren't going to be coming to Space Camp this fall and winter.
But the hope is that progress in reducing the spread of COVID-19 will allow the Space and Rocket Center to welcome more visitors and more space campers when the facility prepares to blast off for a new, more normal season in 2021. Kane Faribault, VOA News.
Thank you for joining us today on VOA Asia. Although our program is concluding, you may continue along with us. We're on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, where you will find us online 24 hours a day. It's all brought to you by our managing editor, Diane Gao, and with help from our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.